I think we'll start. Welcome, everybody. This shiur tonight is co-sponsored by Jeff and Varda Grodko in memory of Jeff's father, Shraga Feivel Ben Sender, Philip Grodko, Alav HaShalom, on the occasion of his yard site, as well as by Alan and Dr. Marjorie Brown in memory of Alan's mother, Pesaldina Bas Avram Eliyahu, Phyllis Brown, Alav HaShalom, on the occasion of her yard site. In these chus of the learning that we are doing together, may their neshamas indeed have an aliyah. It should be a great chus for the neshamas. Okay. All right, folks, we are Sefer Shmuel Perek Hey. And the topic, the title for tonight's shiur might seem a little strange, and maybe it is, but the topic is the Plishtim and Preparation H. And let's just jump right into it and see what that's all about. Where we left off our story last time, at the end of Perek Dalad, we have the fall of the house of Eli, the death of Eli, the death of Pinchas, the death of Chafni. It's the destruction, the really sad and tragic end to what could have been a glorious family line and the glorious priestly leadership within Klal Yisrael. And of course, it ends as we, as was pointed out last week. And so we begin now, Perek Hey. Uplishtim, and of course, all of that occurred either in the context of or in the backdrop of the war with the Plishtim, right? So the Navi now turns to the to the battlefield, to the actual war with the Plishtim, and some of the. Some of the ripple effects of that. So, Perek Hey Pasuk Aleph, Uplishtim lachu es Aron Elohim, vayiviyuhu me'even ha'ezer Ashdoda. The Plishtim were victorious in battle, and not only were they victorious in battle, they were so victorious that they were able to capture the Aron Hashem. If you recall, the Bnei Yisrael took the Aron Hashem to the battlefield because that was going to be their surefire way to victory. Not only did they lose, but they lose the Aron Hashem as well. It is the ultimate capture the flag, where the flag of the Jewish people, in this case the Aron Hashem, is wrested from their ownership. And you can imagine how gut-wrenching this must be. Because on the one hand, it does legitimately reflect how poorly Hashem is considering the loyalty and fidelity and the authenticity of the spiritual standing of Bnei Yisrael at this time. But it also, you know, looking at it from the Bnei Yisrael's perspective, where they were so invested in the Aron, and they thought that they were, that this was a surefire, you know, they couldn't lose on this bet. They put all their money and bet it on, black number 20 or whatever it is. And, there's no plan B here. This was the plan B. And the fact that they lost at this point, and the Aron Hashem was their ace in the hole was taken as well. You can imagine how extraordinarily decimating, psychologically, religiously, emotionally, of course, physically, they lost they lost lives. But you can imagine how devastating this was to the people. Vayikhu plishtim es Aron Elohim, and the plishtim take the Aron Hashem. Vayivuoso beis Dagon, and they bring him to Ashdod, in the Plishti stronghold, to the beis Dagon, to the house of Dagon. Dagon is the pagan idol which they worshipped. Dagon comes from the word dag, and the Mefarshim explain that this. I'm sorry.
It means fish god.
Yeah. So Mefarshim explained, correct, Avi, the Mefarshim explained that this idol was sort of half in the image of a person and half in the image of a fish. Vayashkimu Ashdodim mimacharas, vayatzigu oso etzal Dagon. And they took the Aron Hashem and they placed it next to this idol Dagon. So how do you understand, why is the Navi sharing us with us this little tidbit? How do you read this pasuk. Vayatzigu oso etzal dagon. They capture the flag, they capture the Aron Hashem, and they bring it to the idol Dagon, and they place it right next to the idol Dagon. What is the Navi trying to impart here by giving us this this detail?
That the Plishtim have the audacity to think that the Aron Kodesh can stand next to their Avodah Zarah.
That the Plishtim had the audacity, in other words, that this is a bizayon to the Aron?
The Kodesh, yeah.
Right. In other words, they're taking... in other words, what could they do worse than just beating Bnei Yisrael? What the thing that they could do, which is even more devastating, is to take the symbol of Hashem and subjugate it to their what they believe is their deity. I mean, so that's go.
But that's our opinion. Maybe they just thought, well, they're putting another god next to their god. They're giving it equal
standing.
Keyboard.
Equal keyboard. Okay. So Sidel has a good point. Go ahead, Kalman.
I think that they want to show that Dagon won the war against God, against the Jewish God. Okay. The Aron represents the Jewish God.
Okay. Right. Along the lines of what David was saying as well. Yeah.
Okay. I thought also, in addition to all that, that possibly we're looking at it, we should look at it from the side of the Jewish people. What did we do that we denigrated Hashem? How did we behave? Did we treat him as if he was Chas v'Shalom, an idol?
Right. Okay. So I want to, they say some. There's a story which is told. It's I think it's what's the word? It's a little bit of a cynical story that two people come to a rabbi, and the first one comes in and makes his complaint, and the rabbi says, "You're right." And the second one comes in and makes their complaint against the first one, and the rabbi says, "You're right." And then the rabbi's wife, the rabbitzin, says to him when they walk out, she says, "How could you say he's right and he's right?" Then the rabbi looks at his wife and he says, "You're right also." Right? So tonight, David, Rabbi Shiloni, and Linda, I want to say, you're right, and you're right. Okay? And not just to make shalom. There are, in fact, two strands in the Mefarshim. David and Sidel. So what David and Rabbi Shiloni were saying was basically that this is somehow showing the subjugation of Dagon over the Jews and really denigrating and a devastating win of the Plishtim over Klal Yisrael. It's a real shtach, if you will, real denigration. Sidel, and that's one strand in the Mefarshim. Sidel says something else. She says, no, from their perspective, they're polytheists. Right? They don't need to have one God beating another one. So they took the Aron Hashem and they're putting it in a place of honor, in a place of dignity and respect from their perspective. And in fact, Sidel, there are Mefarshim who say exactly what you said, that it was a sign of respect. I personally would like to suggest what Linda said, and that is really that in a certain sense, it's both. On the one hand, even if you want to say that the Plishtim were giving it a place of respect. And from our perspective, it's just such a bizayon. Maybe the point is both that where Linda was taking it. And that is to say that for us, Klal Yisrael, it's a wake-up call to say, what did we do in our, we have to look inwards a little bit and have some introspection. And maybe this is a wake-up call to us to how we treated and how we related to the Aron Hashem. Maybe we related to the Aron Hashem like an Avodah Zarah, in that we didn't really understand or we didn't appreciate properly that the Aron Hashem is really just a manifestation of Hashem's presence, but it's Hashem behind the Aron. It's not the Aron. And so therefore, our sort of treating the Aron like an Avodah Zarah puts it ultimately, the consequence is that we are now seeing it treated like an Avodah Zarah, either from the Plishtim's perspective in a place of honor, or from our perspective that it's been entirely devastated by an Avodah Zarah. But either way, it gets us to the third way, to the third point here, which was Linda's point, which is that it forces us to think about, well, how did we get to this point? And what is the mussar that we can take from it in terms of our interface and our and how we were and how we were spiritually treating the Aron more like an Egel HaZahav than we were treating the Aron as a conduit or as a shliach, if you will, of Hashem. So, okay, but at the end of the day, the Aron is in the house of the Plishtim. And regardless of what message we are to get from it, it is objectively, from our perspective, being denigrated. Vayashkimu Ashtodim imacharas. The Ashtodim get up in the morning. Vihine Dagon nofel lefanav arza. Dagon, the fish god, is fallen on the on the floor. Lefnei Aron Hashem, and it is now prostrating. In essence, it is lying prostrate on the ground in front of the Aron. Virosh Dagon ushte kapos yadov kirusos el hamiftan, and the head of Dagon and its two hands, remember this is half fish, half human idol, so its head and its two hands have been dismembered from the body, and they are placed el hamiftan. El hamiftan means sort of like the doorway. Rak Dagon Nisharalav, only the fish remains. So we have here apparently that even though the Plishtim were successful and they captured the Aron Hashem, but it's almost like the Medrash tells us the story about Avraham and how he knocked down the idols of his father Terach. Right, so over here, apparently there was a miracle, and Hashem did this in order to demonstrate the weakness, if you will, of the idol and the fact that it's an invalid deity, that there's really nothing to it. Otherwise, how could this happen? So the Pasuk says, Al-Kain, before we go any further, I think it's interesting to ask the question, what is the significance of this, that the head and the hands are krutot el hamiftan? They were like dismembered from body, cut off, el hamiftan, which means the doorway. I'm curious if any of you have in English in front of you, do they translate this Pasuk any differently? This is Perek Hey, Pasuk Dalet. Does anybody have a different translation? Krusos El Hamiftan? No?
Oh, the threshold.
Okay, the threshold. Okay, so basically, the doorway. The threshold is the doorway. Why is this significant? What's the significance of this threshold? So it's lying on the threshold. Why couldn't it be that the Aron Hashem is next to the Dagon, and the Dagon is on the floor right next to the, in the middle of the room? What's the symbolism, or what's the significance of this miftan? And the Pasuk says, Al Kain, therefore, look at Pasuk 5, Al Kain, lo yidruchu chohane Dagon, V'chol haba'im beis Dagon al miftan Dagon ba'ashdod, the priests of Dagon and those who came would not enter the threshold ad hayom hazeh, until this very day. I'm sorry, so Linda, did you want to say something?
Could it have anything to do with the mezuzah? That when we enter our threshold, we have to think of everything we have to do?
Yeah, so on one level, I think that there is something to that. That when you walk through the threshold, that sort of defines, it could be a defining space, and especially for Jews, right? We put the blood of the Karban Pesach on the mezuzah, and that's what defined us, and that's what defines the home, that defines our space as who we are. So here you have The miftan, the equivalent thereof of the mezuzah, has now been stripped of its idol worshipping status, and the idol has been subdued or subjugated under Hashem. Okay, I think that's that's a valid point. Anybody else? Anybody else?
This is a long
Rabbi Kasten.
Go ahead, Avi, and then David.
I want to say that the difference between Dagon being next to the Mizbeach and Dagon being apart from the Mizbeach by like a significant distance is that when you're a Jew and you like bow, like let's say you're like, it's like Yom Kippur, right? The Kohen Gadol is going to use the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Jews are outside. It's very similar to like how the Jews are outside praying at a very big distance. So Hashem might be trying to show the Plishtim, but no. Dagon is now worthy of being like someone like the Kohen Gadol, who's like a lot of be right next to me.
I didn't follow that last point. So saying what? Say that point again.
Okay. So it's like on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol goes in the Kodesh HaKadoshim,
right?
And everyone else waits outside.
Right.
Right? So Hashem might be trying to say that since the Dagon and the Aron, like the Aron's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right?
Right.
So Hashem might be trying to say that Dagon is not worthy of being right next to me. He's not worthy of being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Okay. All right. Good. I have a little pushback on that, which is it's just the hands and the hands and the what does it say here? Kapos Yadav, the Rosh Dagon at the threshold. The body was still sort of on the floor in the main room. But I take your point. Nevertheless, I think that's I think there's something there. David, you had something you wanted to add?
It's not fully fleshed out theory or idea yet, but in the mornings I go through Mishnah Yomi with a Chavrusa, and we're up to Ohalos, and there's a series of Mishnayos where Tuma is halfway in that threshold and halfway out of the threshold. So this kind of reminded me of that concept of how Tuma can be transmitted in and out of the household.
Right, and the threshold is a significant juncture in the Tuma V'Tahara.
An opening of a certain size where Tumah can transmit through, and that's the threshold that's considered, or another window,
right?
Something like that.
Okay.
So the Dagon, some sort of Tumah.
Okay. So. Good point. What I would like to suggest, and I don't think I'm the first one to do so, is that this association, I think, with the mezuzah draws really our attention back to Mitzrayim. And if we think now, if we sort of keep that in the back of our minds as we're reading these psukim, I think that we might notice some additional allusions to Hashem dealing with Paro and Mitzrayim, and how Hashem is dealing with the Plishtim here. And then we'll see perhaps a common thread that, in terms of the message, that the Navi might be trying to put forward. So let's just sort of keep...
In Mitzrayim,
yeah.
It says... Be'elohehem asa Hashem shvatim, the Mitzrayim.
Right.
So he beat the Egyptians and the Elohehem.
Right.
So not the Plishtim, but at least the Elohehem.
Okay. So right. Okay. So Rabbi Shlomi makes an excellent point, which is that in Mitzrayim, Hashem is victorious, or there's conquest over the Mitzrim and the Mitzri gods. So we start here with the Mitzri gods, but we'll see, or the Plishti gods, but we'll see that the Plishtim are also taken into account in just a moment. All right. So we have the mezuzah connection. We have the conquest of the people and their God, that's also a connection. Let's continue further. Vatichbad yad Hashem el ha'ashtodim vayishimem. Pasuk vav. This is pasuk six, and Hashem laid his heavy hand on the Ashtodim. In other words, he smote them, right? He took great vengeance on them. Vayishimem, and he just, obliterated them. Shmama is like chaos, just total obliteration. And this is reminiscent also of Mitzrayim, right? It doesn't say every time that Hashem routs, you know, the enemies of the Jewish people, it doesn't always use this term, you know, Vayishimeim or Shemama, but this sort of like total and absolute and total destruction is also reminiscent of Mitzrayim. And now we have our Plishtim and Preparation H connection. Vayach Osam Ba'afalim. Or bat chorim. What does the pasuk say? It says both. It says vayach osam ba'afalim, and then it says bat chorim. Now, if you're using a Tanakh or a Navi, it will point out, depending on the Navi that you're using. Well, actually, does anybody here have just afalim? Raise your hand. Does anybody here have just afalim? Okay, Leo, I see. On the side, Leo, does it say? Does it say on the side margin? Does it say tchorim? Just curious.
Tchorim.
No. Okay. You're on mute.
Yes, it's translated. The targum is tchorim.
Okay. So the ksiv, the way it's written in the text, is afalim, but the way it's read is tchorim. I'm sorry, the opposite. The way it's written, the ksiv is afalim. The kri, the way it's read publicly, is tchorim. So what are afalim and what are tchorim? So but let's just read to the end of the pasuk. Vayacho samba afalim es ashdod ve'es kvuleha. And Hashem punished them. He smote them. He gave them this terrible plague of afalim. The word ofel really means the highest heights. So when the word tchorim, well, that's a hard one to translate. So the way hemorrhoids. It is, I'm sorry?
Hemorrhoids.
Hemorrhoids, right. So I don't think that hemorrhoids is an ancient word, but it seems to. One major says it's something related to the bathroom, but it seems that it's what we call today hemorrhoids. So this is a very, very odd type of punishment. You know, there's dam, tzfardei, akinim. Okay, maybe those are also weird, but we're. We're sort of desensitized to them. But this one is, I got to say, a little odd that, of all the things that Hashem could have punished the Plishtim with, he punished them with hemorrhoids. So, and this doesn't seem to be just a throwaway line here, because as we'll read the next few psukim, the Navi reiterates over and over and over again about the hemorrhoids. So let's read the psukim. Vayiru anshe Ashdod kichein, and the people of Ashdod now see what's going on. I guess they can't sit down. Vayamru lo yeshev Aron Elohei Yisrael imanu. If we can't sit down, then maybe the Aron Hashem shouldn't be seated with us. Ki kashusa yado aleinu ve'al dagon Eloheinu. So here you have it, Rabbi Shiloni. The hand of Hashem has been hard on us and on our God. So here you have the comparison between what's going on here and calling our attention, paralleling to Mitzrayim. Vayishlchu pasukhes, vayishlchu vayasfu es kol sarnei plishtim aleihem. So the people gather, the sarnei plishtim, these are the officers, these are the elite, these are the leadership. Vayomru, and they say, ma nasel aron Elohei Yisrael, what are we going to do? We can't leave these things as is. Vayomru, and they said, Gat Yisov. Well, let's take it and send it to the city of Gat. Yisov Aron Elohei Yisrael. Vayasebu Aron Elohei Yisrael, and they turn it around and they send it off. They send it off to Gat. Vayhi Acharei Hesabu Oto. Vayhi Ad Hashem Ba'ir Mehuma Gedola Ma'od. Vayachas Anshei Ayir Mekaltan V'Ad Gadol. Vayisatru lahem afalim or tchorim. So it gets to the city of Gat, and the city of Gat doesn't fare too much better. Says the pasuk, after they moved it, the hand of Hashem came on the city, causing a great panic. Mehuma, right? This also reminds us a little bit of Mitzrayim, certainly at the end. He struck the people of the city, young and old, so that hemorrhoids broke out amongst them. This is the big makkah. The big makkah is hemorrhoids. I mean, it's, again, it's a, the fact that the pasuk is reiterating it tells us this is not just throwaway line, just a little detail that may have more or less significance, but this is apparently quite significant. Pasuk tests. And the fact that you have sort of the leaders getting together and figuring out what to do in response to the makkah. Isn't that what happens with Paro and his Khartoumim? Right? They come along and they say, listen, what should we do? How are we going to respond? Should we let them go? What are we going to do? And even this word Heisabu, which comes up three times here in the Pasuk, Pasuk 8 says, Vayishlechu vayasfu, and they Vayomru gat yisov aron. Right? That they were going to move the aron to Gat. This word, sav, vayisov, again, and then we have it at the end of the pasuk, vayasebu es aron, they move the aron. And then in pasuk 9, heisabu oto, they in fact move it. And then in pasuk 10, they move it again, and we find the word heisabu one more time. And this word, to me, reminds me at least, of when the Jews leave Mitzrayim, it says using that word, using that same shorish of Vayisov, that they left Mitzrayim and they were wandering, outside of Mitzrayim on their way before they actually make it to the Yam Suf. But just that language brings us back to Mitzrayim. So sort of content wise, thematically, our minds are on Mitzrayim. And even just the wording over here, and they send out the Aron Hashem, right? They captured the Aron Hashem, just like the Mitzrim captured Bnei Yisrael. And Bnei Yisrael didn't escape. Bnei Yisrael were sent away. Vayhi b'shalach paro. The Jews are sent away from Mitzrayim. Similarly here, the Aron doesn't escape. The Aron doesn't escape the Plishtim. The Plishtim try to get rid of it. Right? This is their big win. This is the capture of the flag that cannot be topped. This is the one that indicates that Dagon overpowers. This is the one that indicates how Dagon overpowers the Aron Hashem. So this is actually like a big deal. Okay, and again, it's reminding us of Mitzrayim. They send us out. Over here, the Plishtim are sending the Aron out. But Gat does not fare too well either. They're also plagued with hemorrhoids. Pasuk 10. Vayishalchu es Aron Elohim Ekron. They can't let it stay in Gat. The people of Gat now can't sit down. So they end up sending it to the town of Ekron, also within the Plishti environs. Vayihi kivo Aron Elohim Ekron, and it was when the Aron Hashem makes it to Ekron, Vayizaku Ekronim Lemor, and the Ekronim also start crying out, saying, "Hey, Sabu Elias Aron Elohim Yisrael Amitenu Vitami, you're sending the Aron here. You want us now to get punished? We're going to die." Vayishalchu vayasfu es kol sarnei plishtim. Vayamru shalchu es aron elohe Yisrael v'yashov l'mkomo v'lo yamis osi v'esami ki haysam mehumas maves b'chol ir kavda ma'od yad Elohim sham. So the Plishti leaders, the Sarnim, they get together and they say, listen, this is not working. It didn't work in Ashdod. It didn't work in Gat, and it didn't work in Ekron. The only thing left to do is to get rid of this thing entirely. I am reminded, lahavdil, when I was a kid, I don't know if anybody here read the Richie Rich comic books. So there were always these adventures of people trying to get into Richie Rich's mansion, which spawned all of eternity, spanned all of eternity, and, you know, trying to steal stuff from the mansion. So in one episode, the thieves come in and they see that there's a safe open and there's a $1 million bill. Say, oh, we got it made, $1 million bill. So they take the $1 million bill, and then after, you know, all these things happen, they can't bring it to a bank, they can't change it, they can't do anything with it. It's just more trouble than anything else. They bring it back to the safe, and they put it back in the safe, and they turn themselves in. All right, so Lahavdil, that is what's happening here. There's so much trouble with this Aron Hashem. Wherever it goes, it just brings tragedy. So they say, let's get rid of it. It's worth more. It costs more than it's worth. So they say, okay, we're going to bring it back we're going to send it back to the Jews. Vayishalchu, again, Pasuk 11. They say, let's send it back. We'll return it to its place. So that v'lo yamis osivas amis, so I and my nation will not be killed. Who the I and my nation is over here is not exactly clear, but let's assume at the very least it means the leader of the, you know, the leaders of the Plishtim speaking about themselves and their citizenry, and that's also a Mitzrayim connection about Paro and his nation, right? And that you know, Paro wanted to get rid of the Jews so that way he would be saved and his nation would be saved. But Hashem Asher Lo Meisu, it wasn't just hemorrhoids. So this came along with death as well, as the pasuk says, Ki asa mehumas maves b'chol ha'ir. There was great commotion and chaos and death in every city by the hand of Hashem. So Mefarshim, based on Chazal, say that this was a really terrible intestinal problem that ultimately led, to death. But even if that is an attribute of it or part of it, essentially it's hemorrhoids. V'hanashim asher lo mesu huku ba'afalim. And those people who didn't die, whether for whatever, those who didn't die, though they still had the problem of the hemorrhoids. But ta'al shava sa'ir ha-shamayim, and the cries went up to heaven. This language of ta'al shavas ha'ir, ta'al shavas ha'ir ha-shamayim, is also reminiscent of Mitzrayim when the Jews cry out to Hashem. Go ahead, Rabbi Shaloni.
Like the name.
Right. It says by Ta'al Shabbatam Ela Elokim, the Jews, Bnei Israel, they cried out and their cries went up to Hashem. But look what it says over here. Vata'al Shavas Ha'ir, the cries of the city went up to the sky, Hashamayim. Right, so Shamayim, we say Hashamayim, Shamayim La Hashem, Ba'aretz Nasan Levnei Adam, but Shamayim is not God. So the Plishtim, their cries went, to the sky. They weren't praying to Hashem; they were praying to the sky. And but this, the language here is reminiscent of Bnei Israel crying out to Hashem. So what's the point here? We have a whole parak here telling us basically how the Plishtim stole the Aron Hashem, and they were. Plagued with the plague of hemorrhoids. What's the idea that the Navi is trying to put forward here? What's the point of this? Just tell us that they couldn't sit down.
It's the Mida Keneged Mida.
Okay, go ahead. What's the Mida Keneged Mida, David?
So they treated the Aron Kodesh with Bizayon and embarrassment. So Hashem found a way to embarrass them.
Yeah. So. I think on one level that's exactly correct, that what the Plishtim did, on one level they fought with Bnei Israel and they beat Bnei Israel, but they're not being punished really for beating Bnei Israel in battle. That Bnei Israel deserved to be beaten as a consequence of the fact that they were beaten, and Hashem allowed this whole to occur, and Hashem didn't step in. Right. This is a sign of the spiritual decadence or desitude of Bnei Israel at the time. So they're not really being punished for going to battle against Bnei Israel. What they are being held account for is the bizayon, the denigration, the demeaning way in which, whether intentionally or not, if you want to take Sadel's approach, that they were actually giving it kavod, you know. But in essence, they are demeaning the Aron Hashem, and by extension, they are demeaning Shem Hashem in the world. And so, therefore, they actually get a rather demeaning punishment. You know, there's honor in dying in battle. I mean, not for me. I don't want to die one way or the other. I prefer to be safe at home. But, you know, for people that are, you know, warriors, there's honor in dying in, you know, dying in battle. But there's not much honor in, you know, in dying from terrible hemorrhoids or from being unable to function because of hemorrhoids. Maybe even is embarrassing. So this is a tremendous bizayon, you know, it's a mida keneged mida, as David said. And if you think about it, let's think back to, you know, to Mitzrayim. The makos in Mitzrayim are also, in many ways, demeaning and denigrating to the Mitzrim. Dam and Tzfardea are taking their ultimate deity or their power of the Yor and rendering it powerless, right? The Yor was supposed to be a great a god, right? That's what enabled them to live. That's the Medrash says that you know that they worship the Yor. So the fact that Hashem renders the Yor powerless, not just powerless, they have, you know, it's entirely incapable of defending itself against this Makah of Dam and Tzfardea as well, is just, you know, is demeaning. And Tzfardea itself is also just demeaning. You have frogs all over the place in their beds and in their ovens and in their, you know, everywhere you turn, there are frogs. That's not a very ferocious kind of plague, but it is a, you know, it is taking this, you know, small animal and really wreaking havoc on Mitzrayim. So you have the havoc here in Plishtim, but it's also, it's a sense of being demeaned. Shchin boils. Again, it's very uncomfortable. It may be even very painful, very, very painful. But the idea of boils per se also has some type of demeaning quality to it. Dam Tzfardea, kinim lice, dever is pestilence, you know, shchin, arbe, is the sky, you know, the locusts come out of the sky. I don't know if that's demeaning or not, but it's really rendering them entirely powerless. So there's supposed to be this great mighty power of the world, Mitzrayim. Paro is supposed to be this great and mighty powerful god, and you know, can't even control basic elements of nature from their perspective, right? Can't even control basic elements of nature. So I think that the perek here is drawing our attention to Mitzrayim in order to reinforce the idea that what the Plishtim are doing here is being punished mida keneged mida for their terrible bizayon of the Aron Hashem. But it's not just about the Mitzrim. I think there's also something for the, you know, for the reader, right? The reader to be thinking about. So I'm gonna see. I'm just going to read for you a short medrash. Hold on one second. It's a very brief medrash. Give one moment. Here we go. Okay. So the medrash says that Hashem punished the Plishtim with this hemorrhoids, and the medrash says, "Haya haplishti yoshev al hasafsal shel nechoshes." The Plishti was sitting on a golden bench. V'chevan shehaya ola, and when he would rise, nivka hasafsal me'atzmo v'haya ola v'shomet es b'nei me'av. The bench would break, and he would lose all of his, you know, he would lose control over his bowels. Right. So just like the imagery here of the Medrash of, you know, sitting on this golden throne, if you will, and, you know, not being able to control one's bowels, that's really very striking in its demeaning nature. So just sort of reflective of that. And all that leads us to really the question of, all right, so what is that for us, the reader, or for Bnei Yisrael? Like, you know, this is all nice to let us know Mida Keneged Mida, but we need a whole parak to tell us about the Mida Keneged Mida, how the Plishtim were demeaned and humiliated. I mean, it's not like Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, this is a seminal event in the history of the Jewish people. So I get why we have 10 Makos, and I mean, this is the formative event of the Jewish people as they are becoming a nation. They are forged into a nation through this process. So I get focusing on the 10 Makos. But the Plishtim? Okay, you know, so we have Plishtim this year. They fought us last year. They fought us 10 years ago, and they're going to fight us 10 years from now. This is not the end. This is not the beginning or the end of the Plishtim. We have a whole parak here about how they had hemorrhoids. So what's the essential idea here? And I think to answer that, we'll move on to the beginning of Perek Vav. We're not going to do the whole Perek Vav, but I want to do at least part of Perek Vav. And I think that we can use this and then close the loop to the question of what is the meaning here. But before I go on, is there any questions or comments? Yeah, Linda.
I was just thinking about the fact that they took the Aron, and that didn't belong to them.
Right.
It was only given to the Jews, so it could not exist with them.
Right. Correct. That, yeah.
And maybe that's why they were, you know, so severely punished.
Right. But that's true. I think that is correct. But the question is, you know, about the piece about being, you know, humiliated and all of that. But let's, okay. Anybody else have a comment? Yeah, Deborah, you wanted to say something? I don't
hear you.
No volume. Oh, okay. Sorry, Deborah. If you want, you can type it into the chat, and I'll get a chance to read it and share it with the group in a moment. Rosalie, you wanted to say something?
I think something here. Number one. Plishtim was mentioned in this Parashat HaShavua also. V'lo nacham melokim derech eretz plishtim ki karuhu yamar lokim penenachem ha'am v'rotam l'chama. The plishtim were in those days very, very strong and big nations. It was not just any Gaza Strip.
Right.
But it was really a nation. They won a few wars against Bnei Israel.
Yes.
Shaul, you know, so it's not, they were like Mitzrayim in those days, very strong,
right.
Very strong. And then they had to be humiliated by Hashem.
Right.
That's the only.
Okay. Deborah says the Plishtim were being moved to a form of tshuva and, whoops, let's get that up on the. Let's get that again. Where did it go? There we are. Okay, Deborah says, the Plishtim were being moved to a form of tshuva and acknowledgement of the presence of the supremacy of Hashem. This hopefully will move Bnei Yisrael to do the same. Right. So I think that's a very important point that Deborah is making, that it's not just about the humiliation of the Plishtim, but it's really meant to sort of be a mirror to Klal Yisrael, for the Bnei Yisrael to sort of themselves see themselves in this, and for us, the reader, to sort of see ourselves in the way that we may demean, not necessarily even intentionally, but the way that we demean Hashem, not through calling Hashem names or stealing the Aron, but the way in which we relate to the mitzvos, and the way which we relate to Avodas Hashem, to the extent that it is maybe more superficial and less profound than it is meant to be, we are in essence sort of demeaning that whole relationship, and so it's meant to be sort of a mirror for Bnei Israel at the time, who treated the Aron like an avodah zara, right? And a mirror for us to the extent that it is relevant to our life story. All right, let's.
In the Tochacha, this sickness is mentioned. Yakcha Hashem.
Yes, the one, Rabbi Shaloni is correct. The one place. Correct. The one place in the Chumash where this is mentioned, the hemorrhoid, the punishment of hemorrhoids, is in the Tochacha, right? If you don't listen to Dvar Hashem, then you will get this punishment of the hemorrhoids. Really? That's the punishment? I mean, there are plenty of other punishments that we get as well. But what's the punishment here? It's when we demean the relationship of Avodas Hashem, so the Mida Keneged Mida, going back to how David phrased it, is that we are demeaned. And in essence, when we do averos, we are demeaning that relationship, and we are demeaning ourselves really as well. Maybe not intentionally, and certainly not willfully. But if we step back and sort of see the bigger picture, it's sort of like when we're in a relationship with a spouse or a good friend, and we take advantage of that relationship, and we don't intend to demean the other person by taking advantage of them, but it's still the consequence of our behavior. So okay, let's just take a look at a few psukim at the beginning of Perek Vav. Vayihi Aron Hashem b'shtei plishtim shiva chadashim. The Aron of Hashem was in the field of plishtim for 7 months. Vayikru plishtim lakohanim lakosmim leimor ma nase l'Aron Hashem. So here we have another connection to Mitzrayim. The plishtim call to their enchanters, I don't know, what's the word, their sorcerers, right? Just like in Mitzrayim, Paro had his chartumim. So the plishtim here, they have their kosmim, they have their sorcerers. Mana sel aron Hashem, what shall we do here? Hodienu b'men shalchenu l'mekavod. Let us know exactly how we should get this back to the Jews. Bayomer, and they said, im shalchim es aron Elohei Yisrael tishalchu osorei kam. If you send it back, don't send it back empty. Send it with some type of gift, some type of compensation, indemnification. And then you'll be healed. Why should you should you be afflicted by this? And they said, Maha Asham Asher Nashivlo. So what kind of compensation are we going to give? Vayomru, and the sorcerer said, Vayomru mispar sarnei plishtim, and the leaders of the plishtim said, Chamisha afolei zahav. This is remarkable. I don't even know how they could do this. They're going to send 5 golden hemorrhoids. V'chamisha achbarei... What?
Images of the hemorrhoids.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly what that looks like, earlier, but
earlier they referred to it as the mice, Rabbi.
Well, no, it says v'chamisha ach barei zahav and five mice, and some of the mepharshim say that the mice went into the innards of the person and ate him out. Kima geifa achas l'kulam l'sar l'sarnehem. This is one plague to all of them and their leaders. Basisam tzalmei afolechem, and here we have the hemorrhoids again. Basisa tzalmei afolechem, the tzalmei achbarechem. You could take these images of the hemorrhoids that destroyed the land. Unisatem l'Elohei Yisrael kavod, and give these golden hemorrhoids to the Jewish God, to the God of Israel, and give him honor. Maybe Hashem will lessen his hand from upon you and upon your God. Why should you be hard of heart? Here we have another Mitzrayim connection. Kaved Lev, right? Paro is Kaved Lev Paro. Why should you be so stubborn? Kasher kibdu Mitzrayim ufaro es libam. And here we have it absolutely spelled out. You want to be like Paro? This is not going to end up well. Halo kasher yisalel bahem v'yishalchum v'yelechum. You know, do the right thing. Send them, just like the Egyptians sent the Jews out, you do the right thing here. And then he gives them advice exactly how to get this tribute, how to get the Aron and the tribute back to the Jewish people. And I'm going to sort of focus in on that second half of Perek Vav next week. But before we go, I want to share with you a medrash. I'm going to put it on your screen in a moment. Okay, sharing screen. Where's my Zoom? There's my Zoom. Share screen. Okay, this is from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. This is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara here explains a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Should I make this a little bit larger on your screen, or can you see it? Maybe I should make it a little larger.
Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Okay. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan Amar. Rabbi Yochanan said that if you take an avodah zarah and its owner destroys it. So the Gemara, actually, let's just go back one line here. Now we'll get the whole thing. Itmar, avodas kochavim shenishtaber me'eleha. If you have an object of idol worship that broke by itself, so we have a machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan amar asura, Shimon ben Lakish amar mutares. So Rabbi Yochanan says it's prohibited to derive any benefit from this avodah zarah. But Rav Shimon ben Lakish says it's destroyed. It no longer has the Isser of Avodah Zarah. It has no longer has the Isser of the prohibition of benefiting from idolatry. Rabbi Yochanan Amar. So what's the reasoning behind each side of this dispute? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Asura Dehalo Batla. Rabbi Yochanan says that it's prohibited. You cannot derive any benefit because the owner did not consciously and willfully revoke its status as an object of idol worship. So therefore, even though it's broken and it's lay in shards, it still has the prohibitions associated with deriving any benefit from Avodah Zarah. Reish Lakish says, that's mutar. Why? Because presumably the owner revoked its status once it broke into shards. So, and if the idol could not, why would the owner do that? Why would the owner do that? If you have a valuable heirloom in your house and it breaks, do you throw it out? You pick it up and you save the pieces to pass on generation to generation because it's so precious to you, right? If you had a ring or a necklace you see me looking to my side over here. You have candlesticks that in my dining room over here that have come down generation to generation. One of them broke, so we're going to take it to the silversmith and have it put back together. Why don't I just throw it out? It's not like it's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Just get a new one. Because if something is precious and it breaks, you don't just get rid of it. If something is precious to you and it breaks, you try to fix it. And if it cannot be fixed, maybe you just collect its pieces and put it in a safe spot just to keep it. You don't just throw it out. So Reish Lakish says that's what's happening. That's his view. If an avodah zarah is destroyed by itself, so Reish Lakish says, of course, the person no longer values it and no longer holds it in regard as an idol. Because if the idol was not powerful enough to prevent itself from being harmed, then certainly it's not worth worshiping because it can't help me. I, the human being, am praying to this idol, but if the idol can't protect itself, it certainly can't save me. Okay, so here you have the two sides of the machlokas. Reish Lakish says that an idol that has been that has been broken by itself, it is no longer prohibited as a piece of idolatry, for the reason that we just pointed out. So now Rav Yochanan has a a kasha. He tries to poke a hole in the logical reasoning of Reish Lakish. And he points to our story here in Shmuel. He says, you know what? Rav Yochanan raises an objection from the book of Shmuel regarding the downfall of Dagon. What does the pasuk say? The Rosh Dagon Ushtei Kapos Yadav, the idol Dagon, right, was severed into parts, and the hands and the head ended up at the threshold. So, and only the trunk was left to him. And from the next verse, it seems that Dagon's worshippers accorded it honor despite its destruction. Right? Didn't we say, it says, therefore the priests of Dagon did not tread on the threshold until this very day. Evidently, even when an idol breaks, its worshippers do not stop worshipping it. In other words, they would not cross this threshold because in this threshold lie this quote-unquote holy idol. So, Amar Lo, scroll down. So Amar Lo, so Reish Lakish said to him, is that proof? The reason the people did not tread on the threshold of Dagon is that they had abandoned their worship of the Dagon and would instead worship the threshold upon which Dagon was found. In other words, don't tell me that the idol is still has a status as of idolatry. No, the idol broke, and they understood the idol broke, but now they transferred their allegiance to the threshold in which the idol, which parts of the idol were sitting. So although the spirit of the Dagon has left the Dagon idol, instead it came and rested upon the threshold. Okay, that's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Okay, so what does this have to? How does this help us, understand? I think from a Musar perspective, from a spiritual perspective, what's going on here in the Navi? So let's think about this. The Jewish people took the Aron Hashem, and they thought that the Aron Hashem was everything, right? And they somehow sort of failed to appreciate what the Aron really represents, and what the Aron really represents is something behind it. It's not the Aron itself that's going to help them win a war. It's about the relationship between Bnei Israel and Hashem. Hashem is the Koach behind the Aron. It's not the Aron itself. So here you have the Plishtim, and they take the Aron. And the Aron apparently overpowers Dagon, because Dagon ends up broken the next day. And what do the Plishtim do? Do the Plishtim just abandon it? No. The Plishtim say, it must not be the Dagon. The Plishtim say it must be something behind the Dagon. And now that spirit apparently is in the threshold. The Plishtim had the wherewithal to sort of see beyond just what the three-dimensional object right in front of them. Now, they didn't quite make it to where they should be. They're pagans after all. But this is a tremendous tochacha to Bnei Yisrael. This is a tremendous tochacha to Bnei Yisrael. This is an idea that I heard, it's not my own idea, but an idea that I heard from another rabbi whose name escapes me for the moment. But you see here, it's a tremendous mussar. So the whole parak here is really, in a certain sense, it's a mirror to Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael had basically demeaned their relationship with Hashem by saying, well, this is all about the Aron. And so they lose the Aron. And the Plishtim are a mirror for that. And then what do the Plishtim do? The Plishtim hold the spirit behind the Dagon in high regard. And somehow the Bnei Yisrael don't seem to follow the same path. And in fact, apparently it's not even important enough for them to try to go find the Aron Hashem. Because it's in the field. What is the opening pasuk in Perek Vav say? Vayhi Aron Hashem b'stei Plishtim Shiva Chadashim. It was sitting in the field of Plishtim. It wasn't sitting in the, in their vault. It wasn't in the palace of the king. It was b'stei Plishtim. It's out in the field for 7 months. And the Plishtim didn't want it, right? It was going from Ekron to, from Ashdod to Gat to Ekron. Where is Bnei Yisrael trying to recover this? Now maybe you'll say, okay, maybe that shows that they didn't, that they realized it was Hashem behind it, you know, but still, it's the Aron Hashem, and one is supposed to, you know, treat it, it's like, well, you know, it didn't save us in war, so, you know, it says Hashem Shalom, you know, it's like, yes, Avi, go ahead.
It's not like no one tried. I mean, Shaul did save the Aron HaKodesh at the very beginning, so you can't say no one tried.
I'm not sure what you're talking about. Where we're talking in these psukim over here, right? In Perek Dalet Hey and Vav, they don't try to bring the Aron back. This is
Shaul tries.
Shaul is later on. Shaul's not now.
Right? No, Shaul, at the very beginning of the, like, when the Plishtim took it, Shaul took the Aron HaKodesh and recovered it.
I'm not sure what you're saying. Are you talking about in Perek Dalet?
Yeah.
They took the Aron, right? And they brought it to the, to the battlefield, right? That's what it tells us.
Yeah, and then like later on, it says that Shaul snatched like the Aron HaKodesh from Goliath.
So that's much later. That's later on historically. That's not here. That's later on.
Oh, really?
Right by Tikra Lanar Ikavod. El Hilakach Aron Elohim et Chamia Veisha Vatomer Galakavod Misrael. The Aron was taken. I don't see in the parak over here what you're saying. I think what you're talking about is later on. So at the end of the day, and with this we will conclude. So at the end of the day, we have here the story of the Plishtim, and I think that the point here for Klal Yisrael at the time, and for the reader, is to understand the importance of valuing and honoring the relationship with Hashem. And not, God forbid, to demean it. And the way to, the way to do that is to realize that the hashgacha of Hashem is not something which resides in, rocks and stones. That's avodah zara. That demeans the relationship. That makes it superficial. But rather to recognize that this is more abstract. And something which is which rests in the soul within every person, which has been endowed by us from Hashem, and in doing that, I think that's the counterpoint to the Plishtim here. It's also the counterpoint to Mitzrayim in the time of the Mitzrim, where it was all about the physical pagan god, rather than understanding that there is something more transcendental than that. And I think that that's the major lesson that the Navi is trying to put forth by spending so much time on the punishment of the Plishtim and doing so in a way that recalls the Makos and Yitzias Mitzrayim. Okay. Any comments or questions? Nope.
I ask a question. Were the Plishtim descendants of Mitzrayim?
They're separate. Though according, I think the Chizkuni, I believe, says that they were, kissing cousins, but they were not. But they're not descendants of the Mitzrayim. Okay, all right. Thank you, everybody, for coming. And Mirtz Hashem, we will pick it up next week, Monday night. Have a good night.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Got this one here.